Are we live now?
I'm recording.
You're listening to Mumbrella Cast.
Mumbrella Cast.
Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Vivian Kelly.
And I'm Tim Burrows. And we're doing things slightly differently this week. Yes, we've embraced the whole working from home vibe that has become so fashionable of late. We're recording the Mumbrella Cast with a new system where we're all in different places. So do bear with us if it's a little bit bumpy just this week as we get the rough edges out of the way. It's just you and I, Viv.
It is, Tim, and I can't help but notice that as we decide to join the world in working remotely and doing things online, you've decided to take it to the next level by giving yourself a backdrop of San Francisco and the Golden Gate Bridge, which is incredibly distracting at a time like this.
Which will be weird for anyone listening to the audio, but yeah, we're using Zoom pretty much for the first time as our recording package. It's weird how sometimes just suddenly all of the early adopters seem to be talking about something. So I recorded a podcast with somebody else the other day using the same thing, the Mark Pollard Sweathead podcast, which if for some weird reason you want more of me in your life, do feel free to take a listen to. Although I'm not sure actually he's posted that one yet, and chatting to a couple of other podcasters, they've been using Zoom to capture conversations when people are in different places. So that's what we also are experimenting with now that we are. And to go back to your original point, as we were hooking up, there was a background option which I pressed, and lo and behold, to Vivian and to Zoe, who's doing the production for us, but not necessarily speaking, they can just see me weirdly hovering over the Golden Gate Bridge, and now I don't know how to turn it off. So for the next 30 minutes or so, you'll just have to picture that's what Vivian is seeing.
Yes, Tim. So all things going to plan in this week's episode, we will be talking about how COVID-19 has hit Mumbrella and what that means for our business.
Nine drops its profit guidance.
And the government's COVID-19 education campaign. So, Tim, why don't we kick off with what's happening with Mumbrella? Because all businesses in media marketing and advertising will be hit in different ways by the short-term and long-term effects of COVID-19, but we're definitely not immune from that, with a lot of our revenue and a lot of our connection with our community coming from events, which obviously can't happen at the moment, and we don't know yet when they can happen again. So why don't you tell anyone, in case they're not yet familiar, what we've decided this week and what we've announced to the market this week?
Yeah, so we are more than 50% an events business. And one of the things that really struck me is just how quickly all of this came. So I wrote a piece for Mumbrella, which went up last night as we're recording this, just explaining why we're basically postponing everything we were planning to do for the next 6 months. And as I was writing it, it just struck me how quickly this came on. You know, the first time I went into my sent emails in my inbox, or I guess that would be outbox, and searched for me using the word COVID or coronavirus, the first time was just under 3 weeks ago. You know, that's how quickly it's sort of come to dominate certainly my working life. I'm sure everybody else's as well. And that was, I was in London at the time for the ISBA conference, the Incorporated Society of British Advertisers. And there was a bit of banter going around in the audience because OMD had been forced to shut their office that day because a staffer had visited Australia and come back with a bit of flu-like symptoms on the way back. So they feared that maybe either not in Australia on the way back, he perhaps contracted the virus. Today he hadn't, but they shut the office and told Omnicom staff they couldn't come to the conference. So all of a sudden it was a little bit real. And just listening to conversations in the room, I could hear sponsors of events talking about could they cancel their contracts, that sort of thing. So it started to feel like maybe maybe this could just become a thing for Australia as well.
It's interesting that that happened so quickly, because you mentioned that people were sort of bantering about COVID-19 and already making jokes about it feels like it's un-PC, and that's unfolded in 3 weeks, where we've gone from bantering about it to suddenly thinking, you know, should we close schools, should we lock down, should we shut down? So with the situation moving so quickly, how did you feel about sort of having to plan for the future when, as you say, so much change in 3 weeks? How can you possibly plan what's going to happen 6 months from now?
Yeah, this is the very strange thing, and it is, and it's how we all talked about it. You know, I remember just 3 weeks ago, I was just very much, oh, I just want to get it, catch it, get it over and done with. Let's have a chickenpox party and just all give it to ourselves. And then, of course, you start reading about the kind of the questions of social responsibility. Suddenly we all became experts on our social obligations to slow the spread so that hospitals aren't overwhelmed for the vulnerable, and you start thinking about it in a different light. It becomes a responsibility. So you know, we quickly, I guess the first challenge for us was we had our travel marketing summit, which was just a matter of days ago, and that was in Sydney, and we thought the main topic of debate there was going to be how can the travel industry bounce back from the disasters of the bushfire season and what that had done for Australia's reputation as a holiday destination. And that seemed bad enough at the time. And even on the day of the travel marketing summit, which feels like it was months ago, but it was only just over a week ago, even on the day, people were still sort of joking a bit. We were providing lots of hand sanitizer, and we'd asked the venue that people wouldn't help themselves to their sort of buffet meal they get served, just little things like that. And there was some awkward bumping of elbows rather than handshakes, but there was also plenty of real handshakes. The mood in the room, I mean, tell me, I mean, you were there as well, obviously. It felt to me like that was the day where things actually really began to change. You know, certainly that was the day that by the evening I was, you know, I said to one of my colleagues, I think we've just run our last event for a while.
Yeah, it was strange because in the face of such unprecedented disaster and change, it was actually a really galvanizing and uplifting day where the travel marketing industry and its associated agencies and brands came together and really looked for solutions and ideas and inspiration without looking to capitalize on tragedy. But as the day unfolded, and it was only Thursday last week, it was Thursday the 12th, and as we record this, it's Thursday the 19th, you know, nobody afterwards sort of kicked on for a big night and went out for espresso martinis to celebrate a job well done.
Which is normally what we do when we're at the Four Seasons.
It is.
They do a good espresso martini.
And it really felt like, oh, instead of this being the beginning of Mumbrella's event season, where we're sort of running a huge conference or education day or awards night every couple of weeks, it was like, oh, this might have to be it, because everything just escalated, everything changed. And we were meant to have the Mumbrella Automotive Marketing Summit down in Melbourne on the Tuesday. And as you say, as things started cascading and the Grand Prix was called off and there were travel bans for media companies and speakers and delegates and sponsors, suddenly it just didn't look like we could keep plugging along with business as usual.
So I guess it might be worth spelling out for those who are actually interested what we have decided to do. So I'll quickly run through our events. So ComsCon, which is our big PR conference for the public relations industry, that would have been in early April. So that was a conference and awards. So the conference is postponed. We're basically talking about postponing everything for at least 6 months. At the moment, we're aiming to run as much as we can in the final quarter of this year. But so much of that depends on what happens over the next few months. But anyway, we've made the call to postpone ComsCon, which is heartbreaking because it's such a good program. We've already judged the awards for ComsCon though, and it doesn't seem fair to ask everyone to wait until maybe November to find out whether they've won. So we're looking into opportunities, as is everyone in the industry, for video streaming opportunities. So I think we'll have some sort of video streaming awards for ComsCon.
And you could do it with your fantastic San Francisco backdrop, Tim, because let me tell you, it's a sight to be seen. So I think people could tune in for that.
It is. Well, look, if as Viv and I are chatting, Zoe, if you could perhaps be kind enough to grab a screenshot, then maybe I'll tweet it when we make the podcast live, so that people can see us in all of our domestic glory. it's worth saying where we are. Yeah, I'm in Neutral Bay in Sydney, Viv, and you're a little nearer the beach.
Yes, I'm in Tamarama in Sydney's eastern suburbs. So there's not a lot of people out and about in the east at the moment. So for my lunch break, I quickly kept my distance from everybody but popped down for a quick swim. So when Zoe takes this screenshot, it's going to be very salty and sandy and beach hair. So look, it's not a bad spot to be while, you know, socially distancing.
And Zoe, I'll just give you a warning to unmute yourself if you're capable of doing so. Where are you in Australia right now?
I am in Waterloo in the, I guess it's the eastern suburbs, yeah.
We are all in Sydney at the moment. And I must admit, my major dilemma, this is becoming a rambling podcast, which I did warn you about, apologise anyway, is whether to try to get to my shack in Tasmania before the midnight Friday deadline, which involves 14 days of self-isolation, because Tasmania has just changed its rules for interstate travel. So I've got to figure that one out before tomorrow, although generally when I stay in Tasmania, it basically does involve splendid self-isolation anyway, so I might not even notice the difference. But for now, we're all in Sydney. Anyway, I was saying, so ComsCon Awards, we're going to figure out a way of, if you're shortlisted, we're going to figure out a way of telling you and trying to do it in some sort of exciting way with a moment of live drama. So we're working out on that one. And then we'll also try and figure out a way of giving you your trophy in some sort of maybe scaled back ceremony later in the year as well, so you actually do get to celebrate properly. So we'll say more on that. We were running our next Digital Essentials course, which was going to be a couple of training workshops we're running in Sydney and Melbourne. So again, those postponed to later in the year. Another one I'm really sad about, Audioland.
I'm so sad about Audioland. Look, it's no secret to anyone listening to this that I'm a huge audio and radio fan, and it was such a good program and I was so looking forward to it in May in Sydney, but obviously we can't do it. But it's the one that I think has probably hit me the hardest, that we're not going to be able to run for quite some time.
Yeah, look, and there was some really great stuff already announced. There was something else we hadn't announced yet, and I was going to be moderating a panel with, a broadcasting hero of mine. So, look, hopefully all of it stays in the program. That's what we're working on. You know, all of these things where we've announced programs are about everything that's still relevant. We still have the conversation later in the year, so we're still working on that one as well, as well as Audioland. The other big one for us, Mumbrella 360, which readers of The Australian on Monday will have read, Mark Ritson, the marketing professor, predicts that if Mumbrella got to run Mumbrella 360 as normal in June, he would present naked from the stage. Viv, how do you feel about that prospect, for one thing?
Look, I like to think that there is an alternative universe out there in which the world got the coronavirus under control, protected the vulnerable, flattened the curve, stopped the spread, and Mark Ritson had to face up to that bold claim he made, because he made it from the safety of absolutely knowing that we would have to postpone this event. But in one
also,
of them,
I'm not sure that the sight of the naked Ritson would be protecting the vulnerable.
Well, I just like to think that there is a world out there in which his hand is forced for making such an outrageous claim. And I think there's an alternative universe out there where he had to do a big back down, which would have been spectacular to watch. And then another one where he had to present naked on stage, which might have been less spectacular to watch, but a lesson in making claims like that. But
well, it's something which I'm hopeful we may be able to discuss with him this time next week. We're working on trying to line him up for next week's Mumbrella cast in late breaking news. So we might get to explore that one next week. But he was right. We are postponing Mumbrella 360. First time we've had to do that since we launched it in 2011. So again, we're working on dates for that one. Again, for the whole team who'd worked on that, and for the number of people who put in some great submission ideas, the many, many sponsors that already signed up, you know, that one, again, really disappointing. But, you know, there's not anyone we talk to who doesn't understand why we're doing it. And I suppose actually one of the things that has occurred to me is one of the tough things has been it takes a while to be able to actually talk about what your plans are. And it felt like forever to me because, you know, there was a gap where people were asking us the question, Viv, and we weren't really able to quite answer it.
It's difficult because everyone gets in touch about a different event. You know, you've got somebody who's coming to Audioland who wants to know if Audioland's on, and then you've got a sponsor of Mumbrella 360 who's wondering what's happening with that. And then you've got somebody who's thinking of entering the Mumbrella Awards who doesn't know if they're going to be on, and so what that means for deadlines and whatnot. But we sort of can't answer one question without answering all of them, because you push one event back and you've got to push them all back, and it has implications for planning and resourcing and attendance and sponsors and everything. Not to mention that as the entire Australian events industry pushes things back, October, November is just going to be, provided everything works out and we get this under control, people are could face the prospect of having an event every single day in the calendar and squeezing it in and getting that locked in as venues, including Sydney's Hilton Hotel, where we have Mumbrella 360 each year. They're not just dealing with us and our inquiries about Mumbrella 360. They're trying to reschedule and reorganise their entire year. So that's why, unfortunately, even though we had some answers, because we didn't have all the answers, it was difficult to communicate our plan as soon as we wanted to, because there's so many stakeholders and so many people who factor into this decision. And so when we're looking at changing our entire way of operating and pushing things back for 6 months, it's a huge task.
Yeah, look, and I suppose those external stakeholders. And I suppose the other thing which maybe people don't think about when they're saying, why can't you just get going again in July, is, you know, our business model is we obviously sell tickets for these events. We have the support of sponsors. You need time ahead of the event to actually sell those things. So it's, you know, even if we assume a positive situation where, you know, lock-ins gradually fall away and the social distancing we don't need to do, it's not as if we can just then immediately run the event the following week, which is why we're saying the final quarter. And the other point to make is we're very lucky, you know, from Mumbrella, because we have got a digital product as well. We've got other things we can do with our business model. Whereas for people who are pure event companies, they've got, I mean, everyone's going to have a tough year, but they're going to have a really tough year.
And so I think we've made it to 360, which is
postponed. Let me move on to the summit series. Postponed. So that's the Mumbrella Sports Marketing Summit was going to be on July the 2nd. The Finance Marketing Summit was going to be on July the 23rd. I don't think we'd even announced the dates of our Sydney Automotive Marketing Summit and the Health Marketing Summit in Sydney, let alone the B2B Marketing Summit and the Retail Marketing Summit, all postponed. Now, being realistic, there's a lot of summits there. I don't think we're going to get all of them in at the end of the year. We'll get in as many as we can, but that's part of the plan we're making at the moment. Lots of things to untangle there. Another big one on our calendar is the Mumbrella Awards. Usually 1,000 people. The last few years, it's been at the Star Event Centre in Pyrmont. It's going to be a long time before we bring 1,000 people from this industry back together again, I think. So we've already launched our call for entries for the awards. So the call for entries will stay live. We're going to move the closing date right back to June the 30th, so the full financial year, and the period that the work covers will, I think, end up extended something like 15 months rather than 12 months. So we'll make that change on when entries are valid for.
And then as well, there's the Publish Conference and Awards, which is something that we do for the publishing industry. Now, when we're looking at the calendar, I think one of the really tough decisions we've had to make is that we just can't run the Publish Conference this year, but we are sticking with the awards.
That's the plan. We're going to do our very best to deliver the Publish Awards, which you know, something which is I guess of all of the awards that we're especially fond of, this is one that we get a little bit sentimental about, because you know, we effectively took on the Publish Awards from what used to be the Excellence Awards from Publishers Australia, which when that organisation got into trouble, we sort of, you know, kind of helped out. So it used to be that we used to be entrants for the awards. Some of the best nights in Mumbrella's history were had there. So we're very fond of the Publish Awards, and we'll find a way of doing them whenever it is. But yeah, the conference will cancel for this year, and we'll let the market tell us whether there is still a gap for a publishing conference come 2021.
All right. So with all that in mind, we should probably move the conversation along, so we're not only...
Yes, let's stop talking about ourselves, shall we?
Talking about ourselves. This obviously hasn't just hit Mumbrella. We're acutely aware of that. So another company that it has hit this week is Nine, which isn't just the TV network. It's also the former Fairfax print assets. It's Stan, the streaming service. It's Domain, the real estate listings and content company. It's many, many things. And today, Tim, as we record on Thursday, it's withdrawn its profit guidance from the Australian Securities Exchange because the ad market is increasingly difficult to reliably predict. So that's their words. What does this mean? Why would you withdraw a guidance that you've given?
Yeah, look, I mean, what you're saying is we don't think we're going to hit the number anymore, you know, the number we promised the market. I see just, you know, in the last few hours as we've been recording, you know, Nine's share price has dropped by just over 9%, nearly 10%. So it's actually the lowest share price for Nine in the history of the company, even before the merger with Fairfax, that hit that landmark today. So, you know, that's since the company kind of listed on the ASX back in 2013 after being saved from insolvency. So, hey, look, it's still a $1.6 billion company as we speak, but when we were chatting a couple of weeks ago, it was a $2 billion company. You know, and it kind of, if you look back at its share price is 93 cents as we speak, possibly even lower by the time people listen to this. You know, at the peak back in July, it was $2.55. So, you know, it's a third of the value of it was. And of course, Nine are better placed than most to weather this. That's the other thing about the situation is it just happens that Nine has been one of the earlier ones to go to the market and explain what's happening. You know, we saw, I think was it oMedia this week also said that they were withdrawing their guidance as well, because spending has, you know, has broadly stopped. But however bad it is for Nine, it's worse for Seven. I'm actually just looking at their share price. Wow. Literally, over the last couple of hours, Seven's share price has dropped by 27%.
And they're not as we record, they haven't yet made a similar announcement, have they?
No, I've not seen one, unless it's gone up in the last few minutes since we started recording. Their share price is now 81 cents. No, I tell a lie. It's 8.1 cents. I got my decimal point in the wrong place. So
I'm very glad you corrected that, because that would have been quite the error to put out on the Mumbrella cast.
Look, it would have been. So again, there, by some way, the share price is now at the lowest in the company's history. Their market capitalization is $125 million. You know, this is, and the Seven West Media isn't just the TV network, obviously, it's Pacific Magazines, although obviously they're trying to sell those to Bauer. They've got the publishing interests out in West Australia as well. With the debt pile that Seven West Media has got, if I remember rightly, there are some banking covenants around what the share price has to be, around their loans, which I wonder what the share price means for that. So everyone's in desperate trouble.
And it's a shame. I mean, look, this whole thing is a shame for everybody, but Seven did have a bit of a bright spot to look forward to, in that media buyers and consumers alike were really going to give its new mini golf reality production, Holy Moly, a go. It struck such a chord at Seven's upfronts late last year and landed so well, and I think could have been, you know, the Lego Masters of 2020 and could have done really well, but they've had to halt production on that, as so many programs have had to. So again, they're facing this financial uncertainty as they also stare down the barrel of programming uncertainty, not to mention that despite reassurances from officials all over the world that the Tokyo 2020 Games are going ahead, Seven is meant to broadcast the Tokyo Games, and things change very quickly. You know, as we record, they're still saying they're on, but July is a long way away, really, when everything changes by the hour, by the second.
Yeah, I watched a live stream of the Australian Olympic Committee press conference from earlier today as we're recording, and they were still insisting that it was on. The phrase, and it was obviously some sort of agreed phrase, they kept saying was, you know, the athletes will all be in a corona-free environment, almost as if they're all planning on putting the entire sporting world into some sort of quarantine bubble for months to come through to July. Now, of course, bit of a twist for Seven, because I think when we would be talking in the office, we're like, what a disaster this will be for Seven if the Olympics doesn't come along, because they've talked about it so much, there are sponsors attached. But I did get an interesting perspective in the last few days from someone else in the industry who made the point that if it doesn't happen, then Seven may get their money back.
And in this environment,
and they paid a lot for it, in this environment, they're not going to be able to monetize what they paid in terms of the level of sponsorship they bring through. So I don't think anyone at Seven would be claiming this, but I wonder if there are some actually keeping their fingers crossed that the Olympics does get. I don't know what their obligations will be if they're postponed rather than cancelled, but that may actually be the saving of Seven's finances, at least in 2020, if that's what happens.
Well, I guess all we can do is wait and see. Oh, I've just got a little notification on my screen, which was a little bit distracting. First technical issue of the podcast, but we'll battle on anyway. I've also had my mum trying to ring me three times throughout this podcast. So
there are lots of little issues to kind of iron out with this working from home, aren't there? I having left the door of the room I'm recording this in open, I have been expecting a visit from one or other of the cats, but that hasn't happened just yet. So that's something to look forward to.
An image of the cat somehow walking along the Golden Gate Bridge behind you, Tim. If you could make that happen, that would be quality content.
I think I might lack the technology. for that one. But yes, no, I have joined in our earlier video conferencing. I have enjoyed the sight of your mother coming in and out at various moments. So it kind of makes it sound like you still live with your parents, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was just going to say, to clarify, I don't. But after telling my mum not to come over because she's over 60 and I have a bit of a cough at the moment, she did the exact opposite of that and showed up at my door to work from my house today. So I banished her to the balcony. Then after a while, she went down to Tamarama Beach for a swim. But then when I was on my video call with you, Tim, she decided to come back in her swimmers. And I was trying to protect that from becoming a part of our video call. So she then hid behind a towel as she snuck into my bathroom and then tried to sneak back out while we were still on the call. And it's only, you know, the first week of working from home. So who knows what else we have in store.
I'll be happy to send you the screenshot later.
Oh, look,
Anyway, look, this is, you know, I guess we're still processing things ourselves really, aren't we? So it is a more rambling podcast than usual. Other stuff we should talk about, I guess it's all COVID related in some way, really, isn't it?
Yes. So the other thing that we had on the agenda to talk about was the government's COVID-19 education campaign. So last week there was an announcement that there would be a $30 million education campaign for the general public about COVID-19. The assets for that finally became available over the weekend just gone. And look, the government has been criticised for being too slow to act on this, which has caused a lot of confusion and anxiety in the population, which could perhaps be contributing to some of the more frustrating consumer behaviours we're seeing, such as hoarding and people treating supermarket staff terribly and collecting toilet paper as a sport. But the campaign has come out, and it's sort of a $30 million campaign that's animated and about washing your hands. I'm not sure that I actually feel a lot more comfort from this campaign or educated by it. What do you think, Tim?
Well, I suppose one of the challenges is I guess everybody is at a different level of understanding of what's going on and where do you try and get it across? You know, I was chatting to somebody about the concept of flattening the curve, which you know, it's something we as a team have talked about, this idea that the single biggest contribution everybody can make is delaying when they get this and working on the assumption that they might just have it and not know about it, reducing the likelihood of passing it on to other people so that when the illnesses peak, the hospital system can cope for vulnerable people, which is where this idea of flatten the curve, the bit of the curve that's above the levels that that the health system can cope with, is as small as possible. So that concept has become clear to people. You know, I mean, I must admit, I think it would only have been Friday of last week that my mind was changed, and that was why it was important to try to self-isolate rather than just get it over and done with and carry on with life as normal. But yeah, you know, chatting about that yesterday, you know, someone was saying, well, you know, shouldn't Scott Morrison be saying more about that in his press conferences? And, you know, I made the point, I've seen photos of him holding up pictures of the curve. So it's not like it's not one of the messages, but that is the challenge, is how do you deal with complex messages? And whose job is it? Is it the Prime Minister or is it Australia's Chief Medical Officer?
I think part of the problem here is we've just been through another crisis with the bushfires. And whilst I wasn't at risk of death from the bushfires in the same way that I'm not a key risk group with COVID-19, I felt so informed every day because it felt like here in Sydney, the New South Wales Rural Fire Service Chief, Shane, was fronting up to the media all the time with really clear messages, really clear updates about where we're at, what we're prioritising, what people can do to help, what damage was done. We had a clear leader, a clear person to turn to, and somebody that everybody was just getting around. At the moment, you know, there's the Prime Minister and then there's the Chief Medical Officer, Brendan Murphy, There's messages coming from the World Health Organization. Twitter's going bananas. The media's going bananas. I do think we don't have someone who people have all gotten behind and decided this is our source of truth at this time.
Yeah, look, and that's a really challenging point, isn't it? Because this is where politics meets good health policy. And the job of the chief medical officer is obviously to give really, really good definitive advice to the politicians who finally have to make the decision, but also to communicate as well. So the challenge must be when the official policy doesn't yet represent the advice they've given. So I kind of, I was fascinated to watch the interview on Insiders on Sunday morning, when it was the Health Minister Greg Hunt and the Chief Medical Officer side by side, and David Spears, in the nicest possible way, just filleted them because there were so many differences, you know, and just made the point. Handshakes, what's the case? Some people are saying handshakes, some people don't. When you walked in the studio, you shook everyone's hands. You know, it was, and then within hours, the policy had changed and handshakes were off the agenda now, and so on. But it's such a difficult job. I used to edit a magazine called Hospital Doctor, which was, you'll be amazed to hear, read by hospital doctors. And I remember then the UK chief medical officer who was retiring described the role as the epicenter of stress. And that's just the thing. All of the problems come to if there's a CMO job you don't want, it's chief medical officer. If you thought being a chief marketing officer was bad. So it does feel like the coming weeks are going to be such a test of the communications ability of the chief medical officer, and the sooner they become the primary source of truth, then I suspect the better it will be for the public's understanding.
And look, the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, finally got some good PR with his address to the nation the other day, particularly around the point where he was almost like the country's disappointed dad, where he stood in front and said, was talking about hoarding, and he really scolded the nation and was like, stop it. I cannot emphasize this enough. Stop it. And basically told consumers that their behavior had been appalling and un-Australian and disappointing. People have generally acknowledged that that was a good piece of communication and positioned him well as a leader. But I think opinion is split on whether that was actually good communication or whether we're just used to bad communication from him. So now our standards are so low that he's hit the bare minimum. And I suspect your interpretation of that will depend on where you sit on the political spectrum. But I think everybody agrees it's better than he did throughout the bushfires. And it did strike a chord with people. I'm not sure it's enough to stop people buying toilet paper and lining up at supermarkets, but at least it's a strong stance.
Yeah, and look, and that consumer psychology is interesting, isn't it? You know, as you know, Adam Ferrier, consumer psychologist and Thinkabell co-founder, wrote a piece for us in which he sort of attempted to explain some of the psychology of the toilet roll hoarding, but he also predicted that it would be over by Friday, which has obviously come and gone. But yeah, I found myself thinking, you know, the consumer psychology, this is the very same population that was so generous and supportive and gave what they can and a little bit more during the bushfires. You know, people dug deep into their pockets, they made donations, they risked their lives with the, you know, volunteer firefighters, etc. Broadly, these are the same people who have been taking more than they need off the shelves in supermarkets. And there's a psychological reason. They weren't good people 2 months ago and now they're bad people. Something else is different about what the triggers are for that consumer behavior. And I suspect that as the government thinks about behavior change, and that should probably be one of the you know, one of those aspects of the communications is what's different, what levers need to be pulled to help people understand that when you're getting cross because there's nothing on the shelves, and when it comes, you grab two, and just in case, when actually you really only need one right now, you're part of the problem. And that just feels like the penny hasn't dropped in the psychology of that.
I think as well, it comes back to that communication and that understanding. And I think part of the problem with the COVID-19 communication is for too many people, it's still a distant problem. What the bushfires had in their favour, devastating as they were that hugely powerful imagery of distraught people, destroyed homes, displaced wildlife. At the moment in Australia, yes, people have died, and yes, that's horrific, and yes, people are sick, and yes, businesses are struggling. There hasn't been that same galvanising imagery yet for us to go, holy shit, this is tragic, and we need to step up. For so many people, it's still, you know, we've seen media reports calling it a China virus or this very foreign problem. Until it hits home, I think people will be a bit more selfish and out for themselves because they don't think it's going to affect them in the way the bushfires affected the nation. So they just want to get their pasta and toilet paper and protect themselves. So we need something powerful, but hopefully we can have that before we sort of have mass deaths and huge strain on our hospital system.
Look, books in the future are going to be written about the psychology of what's been going on. You know, I think we've all been living through a few weeks we never expected to live through. We'll be back next week with the next Umbrella Cast, slightly more structured.
Maybe. I quite like seeing you float above a bridge and just rolling with things as my phone rings and Zoe takes screenshots. But if you want more structure, I guess we can give that a go too.
Well, there's plenty of ways of giving us feedback, and in the end, our audience speaks. So yes, hey, jump onto iTunes and give us a rating, write a review, tell us. Give us a level of between 1 and 10 of how self-indulgent you'd like us to be. But for now, if you're looking to amuse yourself at your desks, don't forget Mumbrella Pro. I believe we still do 7-day free trials. I'm sure we do. You're nodding. So that's a great way there's an awful lot of great catch-up content back from the days when we used to do events in front of people. One day those days will return, I'm sure. But for this week, thank you very much, Zoe, for pressing all of the buttons.
Thank you.
And thank you, Viv, for your contribution.
Thanks for joining me from San Francisco, Tim.
Toodle-pip.